TJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljood. On Wednesday, March 26, hundreds of students gathered in front of Dawson College to protest against Higher Education Minister Pascal Derry's investigation into course content about Palestine at the province's Cégeps. Students demanded the termination of this investigation and Derry's resignation.
Minister Derry, along with the CAP government, has started a campaign to repress and intimidate students, faculty, and administration on our campuses.
Shame!
The student front in the movement, which has consistently mobilized and shown up for our people, has faced repression not only from administrators on Cégep and university campuses who choose to brutalize, surveil, and attempt to shut down time and time again the movement for the liberation of our people.
Shame!
We now face a greater threat from the CAP government and Minister Derry as they attempt to intimidate our teachers into silence, attempting to criminalize education and academic freedom to teach about Palestine.
Shame!
The investigation was announced last December in a social media post. Derry told Radio-Canada that she had been receiving several complaints from students saying they felt unsafe on campus. The Dawson Teachers Union said in a statement that the complaints were not accurate and that this investigation is a distraction from major budget cuts that are the biggest threat to Dawson's learning environment. The union also wrote that its members are doing work that is in line with ministerial and departmental requirements and that other suggestions would be false and inappropriate. Furthermore, the Fédération nationale des enseignantes et des enseignants du Québec, a provincial teachers union, said Derry is in a conflict of interest. Before she was elected as higher education minister, she served as a board member at Quebec's Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. The provincial union also called out Derry for demanding Dawson to justify the content of a French course that explores topics about Palestine, saying this is a political interference and poses as an attack on academic freedom. Derry also reportedly intervened in a Palestinian literature course at Vanier College. She said it's her obligation to ask questions. Rachel Dutch, a Jewish professor at Dawson College, also gave a speech at the protest, calling attention to Israel's killing of Hassam Shabbat, a Palestinian journalist who reported on Gaza as a correspondent for Al Jazeera.
Keep pushing for peace, justice in a world where everyone's human rights are respected, where we care about suffering and the pain of others, and where genocides are stopped.
Woo!
I'll end with this. 2 days ago, a young journalist named Hussam Shabbat was killed in northern Gaza. Hussam wrote a last message to the world, which is not a normal thing for a young person to have to do, because he knew he'd most likely be killed because journalists are killed in Gaza every day. This is what he wrote. I ask you now, don't stop talking about Gaza. Don't let the world turn its back on it. Keep fighting, keep telling our stories until Palestine is free. Woo! End the genocide, free Palestine.
Woo!
Students marched to the Israeli consulate and continued down Rue St. Catherine while surrounded by dozens of riot cops. Protesters then dispersed near McGill and no arrests were made. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Beside the fireplace, take that look from off your face. You- Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. And yeah, we got a great show for you guys today. We have Major League Baseball officially being underway. Opening weekend was a huge success. We'll get into that. Huge news in hockey and basketball, both collegiate and professional. We have the Frozen Four coming up for college. We have the push for the Stanley Cup playoffs. March Madness, we're down to the Final Four. We'll get into that, as well as Kevin Durant being injured for Phoenix. Are they going to shut him down? We'll talk about that over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. So we'll start off with the NHL, because we've been doing a lot of NFL talk. Even last week, we will get into Diggs going to New England, Russell Wilson to the Giants, and now reports Aaron Rodgers throwing with DK Metcalf is linked to the Steelers. We'll get into that later in the show. But since the Stanley Cup playoffs are just, what, a few weeks away now, we got to get into what's happening in the standings. So as we go now to the Atlantic Division, we'll quickly go through the scores. Toronto had a phenomenal road trip. I know they lost in overtime the opening game out west to San Jose. That was a crazy hockey game, but they responded well. They really, really have. The nice win in Los Angeles on Saturday was a 3-1 against the Kings. Then 3-2 yesterday in a hard-fought game against the Anaheim Ducks. They take 5 out of 6 points out west. Now they sit atop of the Atlantic. And that is big for Toronto, because in the past, when they've had the first-round issues with this group, with Matthews, with Marner, with Nylander, with Riley, with Tavares, the problem is they run into Tampa Bay, Florida in the first round, or Boston. Now Boston's completely regressed, just waving the white flag. They've lost 8 in a row. They're out of it. They're trying to get a top 5 pick, it looks like, the way they're playing. But Toronto do not want to play Tampa Bay or Florida in that opening round. That is 1,000% the case. And you can tell it. They're hustling. And if you listen to Toronto radio, they're like, please, God, don't play Tampa Bay or Florida in the first round. We've done it too many times, and it's hard to win one series against one of those teams, let alone two, because if you get through one of them, it's most likely you got the other one in the next round, because they're going to beat a wild card team. And that's exactly what has happened to Toronto in the past. They either lose to Tampa Bay in the first round, or they get through Tampa Bay the one time. Florida's waiting for them in the second round, and they get destroyed in 5 games. So this was a huge road trip for the Leafs. They've had trouble out west in the past. They get the job done. Now they have a 3-point lead atop of the Atlantic. They do have a game in hand on Florida and Tampa Bay. But even if they were to win that game, they would still be 1 point behind. So the Leafs are in a good spot right now. The only problem for them would be they would have to face right now the Ottawa Senators in the first round. Battle of Ontario, and a team that knows them very well. So there's no easy matchups, but if you were to ask Leafs fans, would you rather play Ottawa or one of the Tampa teams, they would 1,000% take Ottawa, which is interesting. But the Senators are playing well. They got a huge, huge point yesterday in a I don't even know. I watched that hockey game. I don't know what to think of it. It was 1-0 in overtime. Sidney Crosby wins it for the Penguins. But that was a huge point for Ottawa, just to give them a little bit of some, get them something out of that hockey game. Because it was slow, sluggish. There was the second of a back-to-back. They needed just to get a point out of the game, and they got it. They got the big win on Thursday in Detroit. They got the big win on Saturday against Columbus, two teams that are looking to get into the postseason. They just had nothing in the tank last night, and they got a point out of it. Forsberg was phenomenal. They take the dumb penalty at the end of regulation, and Crosby wins it in overtime. But still, they would absolutely have taken 5 out of 6 points from those 3 games. And now the Senators, it looks like, I don't want to say they're in, but right now they have 84 points. That's a 7-point cushion over the Montreals, over the Rangers, and then they have, what, an 9-point advantage over Columbus? Ottawa's in, unless they just have one of the great, I don't even know what you want to say, just disasters of all time. The Ottawa Senators are going to make the postseason. So that means we're battling for one spot. That's what's happening. Washington, they're the one seed. Carolina's going to play New Jersey. We know that. Ottawa has a 7-point buffer. Tampa Bay, Florida, Toronto, yeah, that order can change. But all those teams are making the postseason. The one spot in the NHL, maybe, up for grabs down the stretch is that last one in the Eastern Conference, which involves Montreal, involves both New York teams, Detroit, Columbus. That's the battle that we're looking out for. Because the Western Conference, St. Louis, is on an all-time heater. They cannot lose right now. The hottest team in the league. They have won 9 in a row. 9. And they're tied with Minnesota now. And who knows? If they keep winning like this, could they get into a top three spot? I don't know. But right now, it looks like that is over. Vancouver is just limping to the finish line. Calgary, that was just a heartbreaking loss. They had that game done against Edmonton on Saturday night, and then Draisaitl carried Edmonton without McDavid, gets that goal with 3 minutes to go, wins it in overtime. And that was the difference in the hockey game, and that was a huge drop point for Calgary. And they're not done yet, but I just don't see St. Louis losing, what, 5 games down the stretch. I don't. They're playing too well. And they got a tough schedule coming up, Calgary. They got Colorado. That is tonight. Then they got Utah. They play Vegas, Minnesota, Vegas, LA. They're all on the schedule. It's a tough stretch coming up for the Flames. So right now, I would say that race is pretty much dead. You have your 8 playoff teams in the West. You have your 7 playoff teams in the East. We're missing one. Is it Montreal? Is it the Rangers? Is it the Islanders? All those teams are battling for that last spot. And if you're Montreal, I mean, that was a disastrous road trip you had. Just awful performance against St. Louis. An even worse performance, in my opinion, against Philadelphia. And then you get your doors blown off Friday night. It was going to be a disaster. But they go into Florida against the defending cup champions. And a team, for some reason, Montreal just has their number. They've beaten them every time this year, and they get to play them again at home tomorrow night. But that was just a monumental result for Montreal. They needed something positive from that road trip. If they go 0-4 on that road trip and don't even get a point, that could have been deflating for that young group. But they didn't. They played well yesterday. They got a good performance from Montembeau, who, let's be honest, has been exhausted. They've played him a ton. A ton. And you saw it against Colorado. Sure, he made some big saves last Saturday, but he looked tired. He looked tired against St. Louis. And then last night, he finally got a night off against... who did he get the night off against? I'm drawing a blank now. Anyway, he got one of the nights off, and he came back and he responded very well. He played well, and that first line's playing well. So with Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovsky, and Lane Hudson, just a joy to watch. He really is. So Montembeau got the break against Philadelphia. Okay, there you go. So he got the break Thursday, and then he didn't play horrible against Carolina. Montreal just was sleeping. And then he plays well yesterday. So Montreal hanging around, have that last wild card spot. They've got a monumental stretch. Monumental. They got Florida. Then they got Boston, who, I mean, anyone can beat the Bruins right now. Then Philadelphia, Nashville. You got some games you can win here in Montreal. Florida, you've had their number all year long, but that's a big one on Tuesday. Then Thursday, Boston, Saturday, Philly, Sunday, Nashville. You should win those 3 games. And then Detroit behind you in the standings. Then you have the tough games against the Ontario teams. You have Ottawa, Toronto. But then you end with Chicago and Carolina. And knowing Carolina, they're pretty much locked into that spot. I wonder how many players they'll dress in that game. So, to me, Montreal's got 3 tough games left. Maybe 4. I think Toronto will be tough because they're trying to get... At Toronto, they're trying to get the 1 seed in the Atlantic. I think Ottawa would be a tough game just because of the rivalry. They don't like losing to Montreal, and they just can't beat them. So I think that would be a tough out. Florida tomorrow because they're trying to catch Toronto. And possibly the Red Wings game. I don't think the Carolina game will be tough. Not just me. Maybe Carolina come out and they play everyone. But that's the last game of the year. They're pretty much locked into the spot. I don't know how focused they'll be in that hockey game. But come on, Chicago you need to beat. The Predators you need to beat. The Flyers. The Bruins. Like, you got to win those hockey games. You do. And if they do that, they probably get in. Which is interesting. They have to just beat the teams who they should beat, and they should get in. They're fortunate. You look at some other teams that are trying to catch them. They got horrible schedules. Horrible. And if the Islanders aren't getting enough bad luck, they got Tampa Bay, Minnesota, the Capitals, the Rangers, the Devils, the Capitals again, Columbus. They're playing all these teams that are trying to get in the postseason or are firmly in the postseason. Sure, they have one game against Nashville, but come on, Philadelphia once, and the rest are against all playoff caliber teams. There's no Chicago's. There isn't. There's no Bruins. Montreal has that luxury. They got a fairly easy schedule coming down the stretch, and if they just take care of their own business, they should get in. So right now, it's Montreal is in a good spot. That point, or those 2 points, sorry, yesterday in Florida were monumental. Absolutely monumental. So give credit to Montreal. They were taking it from the media because it was a disastrous stretch of hockey. And I know they played well last Thursday at New York against the Islanders. They should have won the game. And the goaltender, Sorokin, stood on his head for the Islanders. They lose that game. Then last Saturday, they were down 4-1, fought back, brought it to overtime, brought it to a shootout. They lose. But still, it was two great performances, but there were two losses. Then they had the three just horrendous performances to start the road trip. And they were looking at a 6-game losing streak. And they responded well. They really did. So watch out for Montreal. They got a big week coming up. You go to the Western Conference. We said it's over now. You have Winnipeg. You have Dallas, who maybe can try and catch Winnipeg, but I don't see it. They've won 5 in a row. Then you got Colorado. And then the two other teams from the Central, Minnesota and St. Louis, are getting in. They're on 87 points each. The Pacific, you're going to get the top three, Golden Knights, Vegas, LA, Edmonton. That's it. Vancouver and Calgary, they both have lost 2 in a row. They're both 5-3-2. 5-5 in their last 10. They're done. The West is done. Now it's just about who plays who. Will the order change? Who gets home ice? The West is done. Barring just a complete disaster by one of those teams. But St. Louis is playing too well, and Minnesota just has enough points that it's a buffer, and they'll be fine. So there you go. It's one playoff spot pretty much left in the NHL. That's the quick rundown for me of the National Hockey League. Quickly to the NBA, and I'm just cannot wait for the postseason because now it's we know the playoff teams, but the Celtics are closing in on the Cavs. They're only 4.5 back now. They've won 8 in a row, 9-1 in their last 10. There was the Jason Tatum injury scare. He was fine. He'll be good. The Cavs, though, 5-5 in their last 10. They've come down to earth a little bit. But trust me, they want that number one seed because as it stands right now, they'd be hosting the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Final. They do not want to go on the road and play a possible Game 7 in the Garden in Boston. They do not want that. The Knicks are just chugging along. They're the third seed. They're firmly in there. Then it's a bit interesting between Indiana, Detroit, and Milwaukee. Who's going to be the 4? Who's going to be the 5? Who's going to be the 6? That's the interesting situation there. And then the play-in's going to involve Atlanta. It's going to involve the Magic. Going to involve the Bulls, who are playing pretty well. They're 7-3 in their last 10. And in the Heat. That's going to be your play-in teams in the East. Toronto, they've won 4 in a row. Who knows? But so is the Heat. So they're not really picking up any ground. So, yeah. The bottom of the East is horrendous. The Hornets, the Wizards, the Sixers, the Nets, it's just awful. Awful. Quickly to the Western Conference, Oklahoma City, 9 wins in a row. They're on fire. A 13.5 game lead over the Houston Rockets, who are in second place. The Nuggets in third. The Lakers, who just are all over the map right now. They either win one game at the buzzer or lose one at the buzzer. It's just a weird week for them. You have the LeBron versus Stephen A. fiasco. They're firmly in a playoff spot. They're the 4 seed right now. And we'll see what happens down the stretch. Right now, they're the 4. The Memphis Grizzlies in the 5th seed at the 5. And that was a crazy week for them. They let their head coach go just randomly. They're in a good spot in the Western Conference, just chilling, cruising. And we get the report that Taylor Jenkins, their head coach, gone. Just out of the blue. So that was a bit of a surprise. Clearly, there was something wrong with him and the relationship between him and the front office, because he's a hell of a basketball coach. And when Ja Morant's on the floor, they play well. I mean, last year, that the whole situation, he was injured. But I remember in years past, they were the 2 seed, 3 seed constantly when he was coaching them. Now they're the 5th seed, right behind the Lakers for the 4 seed, and he gets booted out the door. That's a bit strange. In the play-in right now, you have Minnesota, the Clippers, Dallas, Sacramento. Don't rule out the Suns, but Kevin Durant, that injury could be concerning. I don't know how long he's out for. No word on that. But the bottom of the West, like the East, is putrid. The Utah Jazz, the Pelicans, the Spurs. It's not a good place right now. The bottom of the NBA is horrendous. Like, you look at the bottom of the NHL, you have... yes, the San Jose's and Chicago's and Nashville. But outside of that, Seattle has 68 points. The Bruins have, 69 points. The Sabres have 68 points. The Penguins have 71 points. The Flyers have 69 points. They're not horrible. They're not great, but they're not just putrid. The Bruins are playing putrid right now, but point-wise, they're not horrible. Outside of San Jose, Nashville, and Chicago. You look at the NBA, half of the damn NBA is just horrendous. You have the Cavs, Celtics, Oklahoma City, Houston, the Knicks. They're playing great basketball, and they have a fantastic record. But, oh my God, you have the Wizards at 16-58. The Hornets at 18-56. The Philadelphia 76ers are 23-52. The Nets are 24-51. The Raptors are 28-47. Look at these teams in the play-in. They're under 500. The Hawks are 36-38. The Magic are 36-39. The Bulls are 33-41. The Heat are 33-41. They have a shot to make the postseason. The West is a tad better, but not really. You have 2 teams under 500 in the play-in. But you look at the bottom of the West. The Utah Jazz are 16-59. That's 2-13 basketball. That's horrendous. The Pelicans are 21-54. That's 280 basketball. Then you get a bit of a jump. The Spurs are 31-43. Okay, fair enough. But look at that. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's like 10 teams that are under 400 basketball. That is awful. And that's a problem for the NBA. You get these games some nights that are just horrific. Like when the Celtics play the Jazz or the Cavs play the Pelicans, you just get these score lines. The Celtics played the Jazz on, was it last Friday? It was 121-99. There's some good basketball, but there is a lot of horrendous basketball in the NBA, which is making it borderline unwatchable. So the postseason cannot come fast enough for the NBA, because there are some nights where it's like, it's no point in watching. No point in watching. Quickly before our first break, we have to talk about Major League Baseball. It was opening weekend, and the big storyline, yes, you had the Dodgers going undefeated. It's a super team, which is handing the World Series right now. They're going to win 140 games. Fair enough. The Padres had a great opening weekend. They swept the Braves, took 4 games from them. But everyone in sports are talking about the Yankees and these torpedo bats. The torpedo bats. The New York Yankees. Listen to this. They scored 20 runs on Saturday. 12 yesterday. We're hitting home runs Like they were going out of style. It was unbelievable. And it's all because, if you missed it, the Yankees hired like some guy from MIT to make him like a bat that's legal by MLB rules, but it puts more wood like in the sweet spot of the bat, like closer to the name, closer to the hands, because a lot of hitters for the Yankees get, you know, was like they get a lot of inside pitches. They get like hung up on a changeup or something inside, and they have a tendency to pull the ball, and they don't really hit the sweet spot in the bat. So the Yankees asked this like kid, these people from MIT, to design a bat that's like, it's hard to describe. It's just the barrel is closer to the hands, if that makes sense. It's more of a sweet spot's closer to the hands because Yankee hitters tend to hit it there. And my God, they hit, I don't know how many home runs over the weekend, but it was astronomical. They're calling it torpedo bats. They set the record. They tied the record, on Saturday for most home runs in a game by a team. And then yesterday, they had Aaron Judge going along. They had Jazz Chisholm hit two. It was nuts. So, of course, other teams are complaining about this bat, saying this shouldn't be legal. But right now, Major League Baseball has not said anything. And it might be because it's the Yankees, and if the Yankees are hitting 5, 6, 7 home runs a night at Yankee Stadium, it's going to do huge numbers for them. But I will say, baseball is the one sport where teams are constantly looking for an advantage. Whether it was steroids all those years ago, whether it was the Houston Astros banging the garbage cans to tell their batters what pitch is coming based on the camera. Now we got torpedo bats. It's the one sport where teams are constantly looking to get an advantage somehow, some way. And the Yankees clearly figured things out. They lost Soto in the offseason. And last week when I was doing my MLB preview and my predictions for the American League East, I didn't know anything about these torpedo bats. And I thought the pitching staff would be a concern because Gerrit Cole would be out for the year, Lewis Heel's out for a while. But if you score 20 runs a game, I don't think it matters. But what's the great thing about baseball, though? Come postseason, the home runs tend to die down. Great pitching wins you World Series. And if the Yankees don't have it, they're still not a lock to win the American League. If they hit if the torpedo bats stay hot, then they're going to have a superb chance. But it's the first series of the year against the Brewers. I'm not going to freak out. But if this team's like 13-1, 14-2, and they're just hitting moonshots every game, then I assume Major League Baseball will say something. The torpedo bat took over the sports headlines this weekend. It was, March Madness, Final Four, huh? Anyway, the Yankees are using torpedo bats and are just hitting moonshots. That was basically the sports news this weekend. Quickly looking at it, the Blue Jays had an up and down weekend. It was either they got hammered, which they did on Thursday and Saturday, or they win a nice baseball game comfortably. 3-1 yesterday. Bassett was amazing. And then they had the nice 8-2 win on Friday. So the Jays are 2-2. They split with the Orioles at home. They got a big series coming up, I believe, against the Nationals that kicks off tonight. So we'll see. The Blue Jays are going to really rely on their hitting. They got good starting pitching. Scherzer's on the IL, so I don't know how long that will make him out for. I think it's 15-day IL. Let's see what happens. He is an older pitcher. They're probably going to be cautious with him. But the Blue Jays need some offense. They got it on Friday, but it was 2 runs on Thursday, 5 runs on Saturday, 3 runs yesterday. They just got great pitching. They need the offense to carry them if they want a chance. They got good pitching, but they need better timely hitting. And I like to think Bichette and Guerrero, they're going to get to all-star form this year. But you know Guerrero is going to be. I'm telling Bo Bichette had the injuries last year. At his height, he's one of the best hitting shortstops in all of baseball. So the Blue Jays are going to be fine. They need to win these games coming up, though. They have the Nationals, then the Mets, then the Red Sox. So it's a big stretch coming up for the Blue Jays. Speaking of the Red Sox, as a die Red Sox fan, I was optimistic. They addressed the pitching. They brought in Bregman. The Yankees were in disarray with Cole out for the year, Lewis Heel out for the year, no Juan Soto. Paul Goldschmidt's 100 years old. I was optimistic. And I know it's 1 week later and we have 58 games left. But still, that was a shocking series by the Red Sox. They constantly got runners in the scoring position and just couldn't knock the runs in. And Rafael Devers, who was our best player, I thought, we gave him a $300 million deal 2 years ago, had the worst opening weekend in Major League Baseball history. And you think I'm lying? How about 0 for 16 and 12 strikeouts in four games? Tommy has an RBI. His RBI came on a bases loaded walk. A bases loaded walk was his only RBI. 0 for 16, 12 strikeouts. He was horrendous. Horrendous. And he's a great hitter. He's an all-star caliber player, and there's all the drama with him wanting to play third base, but the Red Sox wanting him to be a DH. Listen, I don't want him on the team if he's going to play like that. And it's the first series of the year. I don't want to overreact. They went 1-3. I'm trying to stay calm. But I like the pitching. I thought Crochet was great in the first game. Thought Walker Buehler had some decent stuff. The kid who pitched yesterday was pretty good. You know, he had the two home runs late that cost them. But I thought Richard Fitz was fine. Pitched six innings. The pitching's going to be fine for the Red Sox. They need to get hits with runners in scoring position. That absolutely killed them. Absolutely killed them. But it's the first weekend. We're not going to overreact. Quickly going through the rest of the American League. Yankees are 3-0. The Rays with a nice series against the Rockies. They take 2 of 3 there. The Orioles went 2 for 2 with the Jays. 2 for 2 with the Jays, as we mentioned. The Red Sox 1-3. The Cleveland Guardians 2-1, and then the rest of that division's a gong show, like we mentioned. The Royals 1-2. The White Sox got a win, which is unbelievable. If they just play 333 baseball the rest of the way, that's better than last year. The Twins and Tigers both go 0-3. The Texas Rangers went 3-1 over the weekend with the Red Sox. The Angels, the Astros all won 2 games. That American League West was on fire. Every team won 2 games. Quickly to the National League, the Marlins went 3-1, the Phillies went 2-1, the Nationals and the Mets both went 1-2, and the big surprise, the NL favorites in the East, the Atlanta Braves, 0-4, they got swept by the San Diego Padres, and a big surprise too, the St. Louis Cardinals, who no one were expecting anything from this year, sweep the Minnesota Twins. They're 3-0, leading the way in the Central. The Reds are 1-2. The Cubs 2-4. The Pirates got walked off 3 times by the Marlins this week. 3 times in the 9th inning. And they're 1-3. So they easily could be 4-0. Instead, they're 1-3. We mentioned the Brewers, 0-3. They got annihilated by the Yankees. Then the NL West, which is going to be maybe the best division of all time. The Dodgers are 5-0. The Padres are 4-0. The Giants 2-1, they had a nice series over the weekend. The Diamondbacks 2-2 with the Cubs, and then the Colorado Rockies at 1-2. So that's your quick Major League Baseball breakdown. Quickly, before we go to break, we have our final four set. It will be Auburn, Houston, Duke, Florida. It's the first time since 2008, I believe. Yep, 2008, that all four number one seeds make the final four. And it's only the second time ever, which is crazy because those are the best teams by a mile coming into the tournament every year. Oh, the one seeds. Oh, pick the one seeds. Pick the one seeds. But someone knocks one of them off. Not this year. We mentioned before the tournament, it's a very top-heavy bracket. The lower teams don't stand a chance this year for some reason. Look at your Auburns. Look at your Floridas. Look at your Dukes. And then you think about the matchups this weekend. Michigan State, Auburn, 1-2. Tennessee, Houston, 1-2. Texas Tech, Florida, 1-3. Alabama, Duke, 1-2. It was all the top three seeds who make the Elite Eight. So there wasn't any upsets at all, hardly, this year in March Madness. The big one was McNeese State beat Clemson, but that's your typical 12 versus 5 upset. So this year, March Madness, there wasn't much madness. Let's be honest. The cream rose to the top, big time. All the one seeds in the Final Four. So we'll preview those games after the break. And we have to talk about Russell Wilson, Stephon Diggs, the two big free agents left on the market. They go to New York and to New England. So we'll get through all of that when we come back from break here on the Tommy John Show. Do not go away.
Hello is putting on a show. On Friday, April 4th, join us at Maison Montreal for a show celebrating our brand new folk music programming month, New Roots. With sets by local artists Girl With Dream, Hanako, and Holly McLaughlin, you won't want to miss this night of intimate singer-songwriter performances. Tickets are on sale now. For more information, check out CJLO on Instagram at CJLOMTL and at CJLO.com.
Check out Jay Nice and Lady Oracle in the Limelight every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for underground hip-hop and R&B right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. We also have to get a quick shout out to Minwoo Lee. He got his first PGA Tour win of his career yesterday, winning the Houston Open, beating out the likes of Scottie Scheffler, Gary Woodland. Rory made a bit of a run on the back nine. But we're 2 weeks away, ladies and gentlemen. We are 2 weeks away from the Masters at Augusta National. We still have San Antonio next week, but not a huge field there. I think Jordan Spieth's going. That'd be probably the big name. You're going to get a lot of the guys who are trying to get into the Masters. You're going to see Ricky Fowler. You're going to see a lot of guys who aren't into the Masters already try and win that golf tournament to get the last spot. And if you remember last year, we had Akshay Bhatia, who's now firmly a top 25, 30 player in the world. He'll be back at Augusta this year. He was not in the Masters field going into the San Antonio. What is it called? The Valero Texas Open or something like that. Going into San Antonio the week before the Masters, did not have a spot. And at 22 years old, he won the golf tournament in a playoff to take the last spot in the Masters. So hopefully we get something like that this weekend. That's kind of what I'm going to watch for. Is there a guy in contention who's not in the Masters field that I can root for so he gets in and gets the last spot? Last year was Bhatia. I think a few years ago it was Corey Connors. So there's been stories in the past where guys aren't in the Masters. They go there, get the win, the qualify. I think Ian Poulter might have been one all those years ago. But I think it was Houston at the time. I think Houston used to be the last tournament before the Masters. Now they switch it around. Houston this week, Masters. Excuse me, San Antonio. This week, Masters, a week after. But yeah, that was the last time we'd see Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy before they tee it up at Augusta. So we're going to obviously preview the Masters next weekend. Maybe we'll get a guest in here, a golf expert, see what we can do, preview the Masters, which is just such a great tournament because it kind of symbolizes spring and that snow's behind us, at least here in Montreal and in Canada. When the Masters on, you hear the birds chirping. The weather's finally nice. It means spring is here and summer's around the corner. At least that's what I get from the Masters. Not to mention the golf course is phenomenal. And everyone knows the golf course because it's there every year. It's like we've played the course before. We know all the holes just because it's always on television. And you get, of course, the LIV guys joining with the PGA Tour. We'll have our Dustin Johnsons there, the John Rahms, the DeChambeaus. All those guys will be there. Competing against Rory, competing against Scottie Scheffler, competing against Xander Schauffele. It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. So that's 2 weeks' time. We'll have one show before that next Monday. So we'll do some Masters talk. I'll see what I can do. Maybe I can get a little PGA Tour golf pro expert on the show to preview the Masters. That'd be fun. We had a huge month of tennis that just happened. We had the two big 1,000 tournaments. We had Indian Wells. Now we had Miami, and we had maybe a new star joined the ranks here on the ATP Tour. Jakub Mensik, 19 years old, born in 2005, won the Miami Open. He beat Novak Djokovic 7-6, 7-6, two tie breaks, and what a great story. He had a crazy run to the final. Young kid, had to beat Taylor Fritz, had to beat the Indian Wells champion Jack Draper in the first round, and he just continued that run the rest of the way. And he takes out Novak Djokovic 7-6, 7-6. So that's a great story for him. You go to the women's side, Sabalenka. If it's not Andreeva or Sabalenka right now, I don't know who it's going to be. They are both playing outstanding tennis. Andreeva got a little bit tired. She lost earlier in the tournament, I think, to Anisimova. But Iga got upset. I don't know what's going on with her. But we're going into the clay court season, which is her bread and butter. She wins Roland Garros every year. So that'll be a big storyline. How can Sabalenka or Andreeva take down Iga in these clay court events? And then if you go to the men, you got to think Alcaraz has got to be the favorite in the clay court season. He plays so well there. He grew up on that surface. He won the French Open last year, but he's up and down right now. When he plays well, like he did in Rotterdam, he just blows away the field. Indian Wells looks like he was going to run away with that tournament. He gets stunned by Draper. So he's up and down all over the place. But I think once he gets back to Europe, once he's back on the red clay, he's going to play well. So he would be my favorite right now heading into the clay court season. It would be interesting to see how Sinner comes back for the French Open. Obviously, he's been out with the suspension. That's what him and his team agreed to. Was that a 3-month suspension? Basically, he's not missing any majors, which is huge for him. But he'll miss the tune-up tournaments. He'll miss Monte Carlo. He'll miss Rome. He'll miss Madrid, Barcelona. He'll miss all those tournaments. But he will be there for the French Open. So if he plays like he's been playing recently, then Sinner is going to be extremely tough to beat. But I don't know how he's going to look. He wouldn't have played professional tennis in 3 months. So that's going to be the big question mark as well. But to me, it's Alcaraz on the red clay. He beat Sinner in the French Open semis last year. And usually when they play, he has his number. So to me, that's what I have to watch out for. But if you have these young kids coming up that are playing well, like Draper and Mensik, look out. And you always have to put Djokovic in that conversation. He made the finals here at Miami. I know he's older, but still, he wins at the French Open a lot. Loves clay. Can't rule him out. There's my little tennis spiel for a bit. So Russell Wilson and Stefon Diggs basically signed with new teams within 10 minutes of each other. We'll start with Stefon Diggs first because I want to go deeper into the Russell Wilson situation. So Stefon Diggs signs a 3-year, $69 million a year deal with the Patriots. And for the Patriots, what the hell? Who cares? You have a boatload of money to spend. You have nothing in that wide receiver room right now. It's Pop Douglas. It's Kayshon Boutte. It's Kendrick Bourne. You have the two rookies who did nothing last year in Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. They did absolutely nothing. So they had to address the wide receiver room, whether it was the draft, whether it was acquiring Brandon Ayuk, DK Metcalf in a trade, then Metcalf goes to Pittsburgh. We're like, oh, we're going to bring in Ayuk coming off a knee injury. No, they go and get Stefon Diggs, who honestly played pretty well in Houston. He was averaging around 65 yards a game, 6-7 catches a game. He was pretty productive for the Texans before he got injured in week 8, week 9. So I like that for New England. He's still a very good route runner. He's got great hands. Is he competitive? Now, there has been the stories of him being, a locker room cancer, and that could be true at times. But Mike Vrabel dealt with A.J. Brown in Tennessee. He knows how to deal with star wide receivers who have a personality. He's been around it before. And they had to do it, New England. They needed a receiver who can break games open and can get separation. And God bless Kayshon Boutte and Kendrick Bourne and Pop Douglas and those guys. They're not Stefon Diggs. They're not. And people are getting hung up on that, the fact that Stefon Diggs got $69 million on a 3-year deal at 31 years old coming off a torn ACL. But the Patriots still have $70 million in cap space. And the other thing they're missing, it's only $26, $27 million guaranteed. So if Stephon Diggs, if they don't like him, they can easily get out of this contract after a year, after 2 years. It's not going to cost them $69 million. If it does cost the Patriots $69 million, then Stephon Diggs would have lived up to the contract and then some. So the money, I'm not concerned about. I like the 3 years. I do. Means he's not coming here for a year to play well, then he's going to leave and get his big contract. No, he's committed to the Patriots. He wanted a longer-term deal. He gets his three-year deal. And Drake May has a 1B receiver, an amazing two, if you want to call him at this point in his career. And he's, listen, been in several different situations, Stephon Diggs, and has seen a lot as an NFL receiver. Was the number one in Minnesota. Made Case Keenum look good. He went to Buffalo when Josh Allen was in the early stage of his career, and he really helped Josh Allen get comfortable and turned him into the player he is today. Now Josh Allen, Superman, he didn't need Stephon Diggs, but at the time, Josh Allen was young, he was showing promise, and the Bills went out and got him Stephon Diggs to help him grow, make it easier on him, to have a receiver who can get separation, who would be open, who can be a high-volume catch receiver. That is Stephon Diggs. So New England, even leading into the offseason, they're like, oh, we need to get Drake May a Stephon Diggs-like receiver like the Bills did for Josh Allen. Well, they just went out and got Stephon Diggs. Now, this is not 5 years ago, and Stephon Diggs is not 26 years old. I understand that. He's coming off a knee injury. I understand that. But all reports are that he's ahead of schedule. He's looking good, and he should be ready for week one. Me, I would only put him in the lineup once he feels like himself. If the doctor's clear him, but he's a bit iffy, no. Don't put him in. Put him on the four-game injured list. Bring him for week five, and then we go. So I like that signing for the Patriots. People are getting hung up. Oh, $69 million. It's $27 million. And if it's $69 million, then Stephon Diggs played out of his mind. The other big news that happened, which we have to get to, is Russell Wilson signed with the Giants. Now, I don't know what the hell's happening in New York. They signed Jameis Winston. I thought, okay, that's going to be the veteran quarterback for the young rookie who comes in, which looks like it's going to be Shedeur Sanders at the time. Then I'm just chilling on a Tuesday afternoon watching NFL Network, and then, oh, breaking news, Russell Wilson signs with the Giants. And I was stunned. Absolutely stunned. Not that Russell Wilson got a contract, but in fact, it was the Giants. The Giants. Why? Oh, my God. Listen, so the Giants now have Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson and Tommy DeVito. Don't forget about Tommy DeVito. Where does this leave them in the draft? Now, is it that they love Travis Hunter so much and Shane, the GM, and Dable, the head coach, went up and said, we need to take Travis Hunter. Please give us a year. We'll get the quarterback next year, but please let us have Travis Hunter. Or they want two veteran guys to mentor Shedeur Sanders. Maybe they'll trade back into the first, get the kid from Louisville, Shuck, or Jackson Dart later in the first round. I don't know. Or maybe they heard the reports that the Browns, like Shedeur Sanders, are probably going to take him. And I don't understand the Shedeur Sanders slander right now. That's a tongue twister. The Shedeur Sanders slander. There we go. Got through it there. I don't understand it. He played in an offense the last 2 years in Colorado that had maybe the worst offensive line in Power 5 football, Division 1 football. It was that bad. He was running for his life half the time, but he showed me a lot of things. He showed me he's tough. He showed me he's clutch on those game-winning drives. And he showed me that, hey, if there's chaos, if the pocket's breaking down, he's not going to get rattled. And I like that. And he's very accurate. He was over 70% completion with the horrendous offensive line at Colorado. And we know Cam Moore is going to go one. I'm not buying the smoke screens. He's going to go one. Whether it's the Titans taking him at one or a team trading up and getting him at one, Cam Moore will be the number one pick in the draft. But Shador Sanders, man, he's accurate. He's calm. He's not going to get flustered. He's been in the limelight for the past 3 years because of his father, because Colorado was must-see TV every Saturday. If I'm the Browns, I would take Shador Sanders. And if I was the Giants, I'd take Shador Sanders. Now, is he going to be a better quarterback than Travis Hunter is as a wide receiver or a corner? Or is he going to be a better quarterback than Abdul Carter is going to be a pass rusher? I don't know. But it's irrelevant. Because if Shador Sanders is a competent NFL quarterback, if he's a top 12, 10 quarterback, then you take him. And I think he can be. Absolutely. Now, if you look at the Browns situation, they're in cap hell because of Deshaun Watson and the worst move maybe ever made by an NFL GM, bringing him in. He's not going to play this year. He had a setback with his Achilles injury. He's not playing. So what do you need if you're the Cleveland Browns? You need a quarterback on a cheap deal that can win you football games if you're Kevin Stefanski. Huh. Why not take Shador Sanders? And I believe Stefanski was on Shermer's staff. Yeah, Pat Shermer. Pat Shermer, who basically mentored or helped mentor Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota. He was Shador Sanders' coordinator the last 2 years in Colorado. So clearly Shador Sanders knows that system, knows the play calling, knows how Pat Shermer, Kevin Stefanski offense would run. I think it makes too much sense. It makes too much sense. And I know Abdul Carter's on the board, and I know Travis Hunter's on the board, but you have Myles Garrett. You have Denzel Ward. You have Jerry Jeudy. You have good players. You need a quarterback. And Shador Sanders will be there at 2. I think the Browns should just take him. Now, they might be cute. Oh, we're going to take Abdul Carter, hoping Shador falls and we can trade and get him. Nonsense. Don't fool around with this. If I'm the Browns, I'm taking Shador Sanders. I am. I'm in salary cap hell. This would help a lot. A quarterback on a cheap deal, and away we go. But maybe Abdul Carter's too good of a prospect to pass up. Maybe Travis Hunter's too good to pass up. I don't know what's going through their minds. I don't. But all I know is they must have some kind of thing for Shador Sanders, or else the Giants don't sign Russell Wilson. To me, it doesn't make sense. Two veterans in the same week they sign? I think they like Shador Sanders, but they were scared that the Browns are going to take him at 2. And they had to get another quarterback on the roster. So I believe the Giants are taking Shador if he's there at 3. But I think they got wind that the Browns might take him at 2. And they didn't like that one bit. They did not want to go into the year with Jameis Winston, with Tommy DeVito. I think they wanted a rookie quarterback. Now, maybe they take Jackson Dart. Maybe they take the kid from Louisville. Maybe they take Kyle McCord from Syracuse. I don't know. But what I do know is you don't sign two veteran quarterbacks in a week when you have the third overall pick if the quarterback you like is going to be there. You just don't. One veteran, okay. Two? It's a one-year deal for us. In my opinion, they went in, we'll sign Jameis Winston, we'll give him the contract, two-year deal. He'll be our backup, or he'll be our mentor year one, backup year two. Russell Wilson, just a one-year deal. Like, oh yeah, Russell Wilson, one-year deal. I think they wanted Shador, but then they heard that the Browns liked him, and they panicked. Because there's no way, like I mentioned last week, that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, who are on the hot seat and it was given 1 year to turn around, bring in Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston as their answer at quarterback. There's no way. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I will finish talking about this Russell Wilson situation because I still think there's more to the story. Do not go away. This is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
CIDAD d'Afrique invites you to discover new talent with its World Music Showcase, the 18th edition of CIDAD d'Or dans la musique du monde. Come discover 36 acts every Tuesday and Wednesday at Club Balatou until April 9th. Take part in the free showcase concerts and vote for your favorite artist. More info on CIDAD d'Or.com Facebook, and Instagram.
The Go-Go Radio Magic Show. Every Friday night from 6 to 8 on CJLO. Tune in. Turn on. Freak out.
Back here at Tommy John Show. So yeah, we just, it doesn't make, think about this for a second. You're on the hot seat as a head coach and general manager. You've been there for years. You let your star player walk to your rival in Saquon Barkley. He has one of the great seasons in NFL history, wins a Super Bowl. You let him go, and it was on film because you did Hard Knocks. So you, everyone in the world knows you look like idiots. You gave Daniel Jones a four-year, $160 million contract. And you're still given one more chance. The owner says, fine. I'll give you that one playoff run you had a few years ago. That was impressive. So I'm still keeping you around. But this is your 1 year. And you're going to go in to that 1 year with two washed-up veteran quarterbacks as your answer. No. It doesn't make sense. I think they love Shador Sanders, and if Shador Sanders is there, they'll take him. But I think they got wind that Shador might go two to the Browns, and now they're going in with Jameis Winston. That's what I think happened. There's no way in hell, unless they're that dumb, that they're going to put their job on the line and have Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and Tommy DeVito. There's just no way. And it could be they love Jackson Dart, but really, Jackson Dart 2 months ago was a fourth-round pick. This kid from Louisville, he was a fifth-round pick. Riley Leonard can't throw that well. So I don't understand where this is coming from. But to me, they love Shador Sanders. He was throwing with Malik Nabers in the streets of Manhattan during Heisman weekend. He's a Sanders, like an Eli Manning, a big name, crazy huge in the football world, will not be rattled in a city like New York. To me, they wanted Shador Sanders. And they still might get him if the Browns pass on him and take Carter or Hunter. But I think they got wind that Stefanski likes Shador. They have the Deshaun Watson contract on their books, and having Shador would be a great way to win football games with a low cap number at quarterback. To me, that's what they heard. And they're just trying to cover their tails. I would use another word, but we're on radio. So I still think the Giants will take a quarterback in this draft. I don't know if it's at three. I don't know if it's in the second round. But to me, they're not going to go into 2025 with their jobs on the line and have Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston as the two quarterbacks. I just don't see it. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm the crazy one. There's just no way. I think they heard Cleveland like Shador. And they're just not going to risk it. And if everything goes well, okay, you take Shador Sanders, you cut either DeVito or I don't think they cut Wilson. You cut DeVito. And you have Shador, Russ, and Jameis. But they're just saying, you know what? Just in case, we have to let a later quarterback sit a bit. We have two veterans who can win us games. That's it. There's no way they do this unless they heard the Browns like Shador. There's no way. Thank you guys for listening. We're back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on CGLO 1690 a.m., where we will preview the Masters Tournament. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Thank you guys for listening.
You're listening to CJLO.